Hi, I am Anne Lemnitzer. I'm with the University of California in Irvine.
And I'm Lori Simpson. I'm with Langen Engineering.
And we are part of the DFI Board of Trustees.
Welcome to the DFI Podcast.
Hello, this is Sebastian from the DFI Podcast, and I'm here with Bernardo in Costa Rica. And he's going to show us about an awesome project that he's doing with Team Foundations.
Hello guys, hello everybody, welcome to Costa Rica. We are here at the project called Circunvalación Norte. Circunvalación Norte is basically, we're closing the perimeter highway for the capital of San Jose. And right now we are in the biggest underpass of Costa Rica with over more than 700 build shops. And we're really excited to have Sebastian here with us.
This is the view from outside. So this is the way the road is going to be. That is the equipment, and this is what we're doing. And now we're gonna go down there to see how these pipes look from below.
Okay, guys, so we're now in the under level of the underpass, as I told, the biggest underpass in construction right now in Costa Rica, with a length of over 500 meters. We're seeing the drill shafts. The drill shafts here they have diameters of 1 and 1.2 meters, and the depths, they vary between 15 and 22 meters. The spacing between the drill shafts, we have a drill shaft, a space, and another drill shaft. So we can say that these two diameters from center to center. The terrain, basically what we have here is a mix of silty clay and silty sand, something around it. Most of the drill shafts we drill with water, but it's not a water level. The water level here is over 40 meters of depth, so we have some...
I'm really happy to have the visit of you guys from all the DFI community. This is an invitation to all the community to come here to Costa Rica and see our projects. This project, it was designed and it's actually being constructed by Costa Rican team. And it's, for us, it's a pleasure to show you what we're doing over here. I hope to see you, everybody, in the annual conference this year in...
Ay, me puta
Colorado! Vámonos.
Hello! Hi, I'm Cassie Rutherford. I'm an associate professor in geotechnical engineering at Iowa State University.
Hello, I'm Judith Catrinidad. I'm assistant professor also at Iowa State University.
One of the new things that we're both working on is soil improvement. We're looking at all different ways to add biopolymers to improve soil strength and erosion, as well as looking at magnetic particle rotation in unique ways to try to improve soil.
Some of the challenges that we face when we teach geotechnical engineering are related to student engagement and try to get them interested in things that happen on the ground and soils and all those types of things.
So, Cassie, if I can ask you a question about the research that you just shared with us, how do you think that impacts the industry and why is it important for us to do that?
I think that we need to look at a lot of different new technologies and ways that we can improve soils. There's always different types of ways, such as using biopolymers that decrease carbon emissions. The other thing is that by using magnetic soil particles, we can actually control that fabric, which is a new way to design any type of soil reinforcement.
Awesome. That sounds pretty interesting and fascinating. So let me ask you, you're talking about student engagement and, advocating for what is coming up in the industry and how do you excite the students to get into the industry. So what are the different ways the university is trying to help in terms of doing the same?
So some of the things that we're kind of doing in the class are in-class activities. We're also trying to contact some companies to get some real data and get the students to work in projects so that they model a project that's happening right now and so they get excited to try to predict what's happening, like settlement analysis and foundation and movement and things like that.
Awesome. I'm sure the students should be hooked on to what you're talking about. So another question I would like to ask is, like, what kind of advice do you have for the students who are getting ready to graduate soon.
Yeah, so we always encourage students to try to get internships. We think that real world experience working with different companies is a great way to learn about the field. The other thing is that if students are interested in innovative techniques, they can always try to get undergraduate research. So a lot of faculty are always looking for students to work in their labs, and as an undergraduate, you can also contribute to different types of research.
What about you?
So we do this, we have that undergrad research from, I think, at a department in a university level, so that's like interesting for the students, and that like allows them to have experience with research. Some of them are convinced of pursuing grad studies after that, and some others just like try to apply what they learn when they go to work for industry.
That's awesome. So one last question to both of you. When you're not teaching, what do you like to do?
Well, I'm very crafty, so I like to crochet. I also do a lot of different quilting and things like that. But the key thing that I've been working on a lot lately is I have aquariums. So now I have 3 different aquariums in my house, and I have frogs, fish, snails, all different types of aquatic life.
Well, I like hiking. I know they are not mountains in Iowa, but I still like to walk. And one of my biggest thing when I'm not teaching is taking pictures, specifically pictures of food.
We all love food. What is one of the favorite cuisines of yours? Asian. If you can pick one, Asian? Ooh.
Yeah.
What about you, Cassie?
I love Mexican food.
Ooh. Well, thank you so much, Cassie, and thank you so much.
Duterka.
Thank you so much, Cassie, and thank you so much, Duterka. It has been a pleasure to know more about what you do behind the closed doors as professors and open doors after you finish teaching. Thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Tim Siegel, and I'm back at the UCSF Hospital in downtown San Francisco, where we're soil mixing. Right now, I've got Rick Ford, a geologist on the project, and I want to ask Rick if he'll do a quick thumbnail sketch of the geology at the site. Rick, take it away.
Thanks. Basically, the site has been constructed, or the hospital has been constructed, in an alcove or in a bench that has been weathered into the side of twin peaks that are built up on Franciscan complex bedrock, which is very resistant. And in this little alcove, perhaps in the last 10,000 years, it's been filled in with dune sand, which covers the whole western side of San Francisco. And so what we're doing is trying to stabilize that dune sand and also run piles through it into the bedrock, and the chert bedrock that underlies it. Any other questions?
Sure. The dune sand, how would you describe it? Is it pretty clean or is it clay?
In general, it's really clean.
Okay.
It's like the dunes that you'd see out at Ocean Beach.
Perfect soil mixing material, huh?
Yeah, very, lots of voids.
Great. Well, tell us a little bit about the Franciscan. Well, a lot of our viewers probably haven't heard of it, but it's a really fantastic formation. Broken up?
Yeah, the interesting part about the Franciscan is that it's called the Franciscan Melange in this area, which is a mixture. Melange means mixture of different types of rocks. The chert, sandstone, which is the predominant unit in the Franciscan complex, and greenstone or volcanic rocks. And they've all been deposited together out in the ocean and then faulted and sheared and mixed and brought to the current location here.
Perfect. All right, last question for you, Rick.
Yes, sir.
What are we looking at in this slope right here? Pop quiz.
And this is some of the chert, which is a biogenic rock, which means it comes from little critters that are silica-based, kind of like plankton-like organisms that rain to the bottom of the ocean and solidify. And you can see the layers that they solidified probably in the Cretaceous to the Jurassic about 150 million years ago.
Great. Pretty smart guy, huh? Talk to y'all later. Bye-bye.
Hello, everyone. I'm Lucky Nagarajan. I'm here with Anahita, who is a senior geotechnical consultant at WSP. Apart from her combined contributions into the infrastructure industry, she also has a postdoctoral degree from Purdue University and is known for her research on resilient extraterrestrial habitats. This is to address the grand challenge of human settlements on Moon and Mars. How cool is that? Welcome to the interview with the industry, Anahita. I'm really excited to have you here.
Thank you, Lucky. It's nice having, like, being here, part of this podcast.
Thank you. As a senior consultant, tell us about your role at WSP.
After doing my postdoc at Purdue, it has been like 4.5 years now that I've joined WSP based in New York office. So I have been working in some of the local and some national projects at WSP. In the, let's say, past 2.5 years, I have been working in a very cool tunnel project, which is in Baltimore, BMP or Frederick Douglass Tunnel Project. I have also been involved in some research projects that we have been like FHWA, but yeah, very cool projects that you're doing at WSP. Yeah.
Major projects all around the country and you're part of it. It's amazing to hear.
Thank you.
Hi everyone, I'm Michael Bennett. I'm a project geotechnical engineer at American Geotechnical and Environmental Services, go by AGES for short, in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, just outside Philadelphia. And when I'm not working on the geotechnical aspects of transportation projects, I really enjoy studying geotech history. I call it geohistory, but just because that rolls off the tongue more easily. And I'll be making a series of short videos for DFI about my side hustle. We can call it the Geohistory Channel. So I'll kick that off today with some background about myself and why I'm passionate about this topic. So I've loved history my whole life. It has always spoken to me. It's so real, so relatable. And as a kid, I spent a lot of time with my mother's parents, and they were born in the early 1920s. So I really enjoyed discussing their experiences with them, the Great Depression, World War II. It brought history to life for me. And then later, when I did Boy Scouts, I interviewed 10 U.S. veterans for my Eagle Scout project. I spoke with vets who had served in eras ranging and conflicts ranging from World War II to Desert Storm. I taped the interviews, and I sent them to the Library of Congress for preservation. I would say that has been one of my greatest privileges to date. And so my conversations with my grandparents, the interviews I did with the veterans, that all taught me that history is, above everything else, human. Events and time periods don't just occur in the abstract to distant, ancient, unrelatable people. You know, they occur to our predecessors who were just as mortal as us. And our forebears had failings, for sure, and we need to learn from those and keep those lessons in mind. But our predecessors' humanity is what made their accomplishments all the more remarkable. If you just look at U.S. history, you have the founders, the abolitionists, suffragettes, civil rights activists, and they persisted in the face of badly flawed systems, repeated setbacks, and personal shortcomings to achieve outstanding things. And those stories remind us that history is never preordained. That makes it such a valuable guide to us for navigating contemporary challenges. So it was actually my love of history that sort of indirectly got me into CV, ironically, because from my earliest years, I really loved the history of railroads and trains. I visited the Railroad Museum of Pennsylvania more times than my parents probably want to remember when I was a kid. I never tired of seeing the locomotives, the passenger cars, the boxcars. I think my favorite piece in the museum was always the GG1, the electric locomotive from the Pennsylvania Railroad. And then back home, I'd play with my Brio and my Thomas trains, and I'd do that for hours on end. I got into model trains as I got a little older, and the layout Dad and I built still sprawls across a few ping pong tables in my parents' basement. So when it came time for me to choose what I wanted to do for a career, I really came to realize fairly quickly that CV was just such a natural choice because I really wanted to help improve the world by improving its built structures and infrastructure. That really clicked with me. And so I attended Lafayette College in Easton, Pennsylvania. I had enough room in my schedule there to earn both a BS in civil engineering, or as I call it, CV, and a BA in history. So it was there that I first found my passion for geotech. I really wanted to explore the discipline in greater depth. And so once I graduated from Lafayette in 2017, I headed to Virginia Tech. Spent the next 2 years there earning a master's in CV, geotech concentration, and I finished my studies in July 2019 and entered the workforce. But 6 months later, the COVID pandemic broke out, and it impacted far too many lives, of course, in tragic and damaging ways, and it certainly rewrote the definition of normal. And as we all work to stay safe and healthy, many of us found new pastimes, and mine was reading geotechnical literature to sharpen my professional skills. So as I read, I started to consider the question of where all this knowledge had come from, and I came to believe that our profession really could benefit from finding its roots a little bit more. From my point of view, improving our understanding of geohistory will bolster the field by ensuring the robustness of its fundamentals and by ushering in new solutions, new techniques, and new ways of thinking. And so I think in turn that that will help us better protect and serve the public by raising the standard of care and improving best practices, and it will also help us save time and money during design, construction, and maintenance. And so my first thought with all this geohistory was to try writing a book on it, but fortunately for everyone, my good friend and VT classmate Thomas Kennedy talked me into the more manageable goal of writing a blog about it. And the rest truly is history. I've spent the past 3 years blogging, first together with Thomas and then on my own, on geohistory topics from the South Fork Dam and Johnstown flood of 1889 to most recently the link between Carl Terzaghi and the Darwin family. I've been utilizing pieces of geohistory for these write-ups, including books and articles, blueprints, letters, even stock certificates that I've collected since I really got interested in this in the fall of 2020. I've had a blast spreading the word about geohistory wherever I can, including in articles for Deep Foundations magazine and presentations at DFI and my local Geo Institute. And since last year, I've even been teaming with the National Geo Institute to blog on their website, which has really been a privilege. And now I'll be making geohistory videos in partnership with the folks at DFI. My thanks to Sebastian Lobo Guerrero, my AGES colleague and a DFI leader, for helping me with this opportunity and bringing it to reality. So in each video, I'll show everyone a piece from my geohistory collection, and I'll talk about what it is, why I acquired it, and either what I've written about it or what I hope to write about it. And I hope I also get to hear from all of you about some of the ideas you have for exploring geohistory ideas that I might be able to pursue, because I think geohistory really is a story of diverse perspectives coming together to advance the field far beyond what any one person could. So I can't wait to get started in our next video. And until next time, I'm Michael Bennett, signing off for the Geo.
On behalf of DFI, we hope you enjoyed this episode. The views, information, and opinions expressed during Deep Foundation Institute's podcasts are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of DFI. DFI does not verify or take responsibility for the accuracy of the information contained, nor does it warrant that the information contained herein is suitable for any general or specific use. The podcast is available for private, non-commercial use only. Editing, modification, or redistribution of this podcast is prohibited. Thanks for your time. Keep on surviving.